So it's a coronation and there is not going to be any election. That is the news that we take from last week and the SNP. My friend, this is episode number 98 of the Bricks and Mortar podcast. For a moment there, it looked as if Graham McCormack was going to stand, and that would have put the amongst the pigeons, wouldn't it? I read one of the newspapers, and it said, and I quote this, McCormack said he reached the nomination threshold of 100 signatures, but chose to back Swinney after a, open quote, lengthy and fruitful conversation, close quote, and said this could be a fresh start. Well, we know what that means. It means that he got told to get back in his fucking box and stop upsetting the apple cart. So there we go, John Swinney. I wonder if Labour and that toad of a man, Ross, are actually now thinking it's maybe not been such a good idea. Much better to fight an opponent like Hamza Yousaf, who's on the back foot, rather than get somebody who has been with the SNP for, what were they saying today, 40 years or so, and is clearly, certainly on that first showing, when he did that speech today, he looks a stronger candidate, an opponent. So I wonder if they might have just shot themselves in the foot. As ever, we will see. This week's show, I'll tell you what I'm going to talk about. Sharks in the water. That probably needs a little bit of an explanation, but I will come on to that. So we've got sharks in the water. And a little bit about ADS and when you need to pay ADS and when you don't need to pay ADS. And then I'll do a little bit of a run-through of Skipton's offering on the joint borrower sole proprietor, which they now call Income Booster, if you've seen that in the press. That's where you've got joint borrowers, so you've got more than one borrower to help with the affordability, and that then gets you the mortgage, but only one person is on the title. Let's talk sharks in the water. I was along at Nick Ponti's seminar again. If you've not been to Nick Ponti's seminar series, it's absolutely wonderful. It is held at the Village Hotel on the first Wednesday of each month, and I do a little bit of a skit on mortgages. Nick does something, and we've got an estate agent, and Jill Green does something on her projects. But the best thing about the evening is the networking, and you're always speaking to people that you've never spoken to before, and they're always asking for your advice. So it was a great evening. I'm just about to pack up. I'm quite literally heading out the door when this guy collars me and says, "Can I just have you for a minute?" And I'm thinking, I'm a wee bit tired and I want to go home. And I knew this minute was not going to be a minute. And in essence, about 15 minutes later, I packed up and left. But this thing about sharks in the water, what this guy told me was that in essence, he had fallen out with his joint venture partner. The joint venture partner had brought the deal and was organizing finance. And I think, as with a lot of these things, it is based upon trust. And as soon as you have a break in trust, then it is very, very difficult to regain that trust. Now, what this chap told me was that, and it appeared that he had done all his due diligence, he had known this person for a good number of years, had followed their story, and that it looked as if they couldn't have done anything else in terms of the due diligence. Because I think you really only get to know somebody once you start going into business and there's money on the line, and it does change people. That lure of a profit, suddenly you almost unpack everything in terms of what that person is like, and you really see them for their true selves. Anyway, he had wanted to try and extricate himself. There was bridging involved. There was a first charge on the property that they had bought. There was a floating charge on the assets of the company. So clearly they must have set up a limited company. And also there was a PG. So all of the parties in the deal had signed a personal guarantee. And that's, I think, the tricky thing with regards to how they're going to extricate themselves from this mess. The first thing I would always say is make sure that you've got everything documented in writing and make sure that you understand what the exit is if you fall out. There is so much benefit in detailing that in writing when you're still talking. There is a disaster waiting to happen if you haven't got that written down, because if you haven't got it written down and you fall out, then it really is going to be a horrible, horrible mess. Listen, it probably is still going to be a horrible mess if it's written down, but at least you can rely upon what you had agreed when you were still talking to one another. Trying to extricate yourself from a relationship where you're not talking is just going to feed into a very, very expensive legal bill. That's for sure. So get everything in writing and make sure that you understand that you get a way out here and get that in writing. It goes without saying that you need to do your due diligence. And I think, you know, you can, as I say, do all the due diligence that you can, but ultimately you may not be going into business with somebody ultimately that you can trust. And what do you then do? Do you give them a second chance? Do you give them a third chance? It's very, very difficult. You know, if somebody says they're going to pay something and they don't pay it, and then they say that they'll do something else and they don't do it, I mean, I don't know. Do you give somebody a second chance? I think if you give somebody a second chance, you shouldn't be giving them a third chance. Anyway, what he wanted to chat about was the personal guarantee. And what I said to him was, the bank has got you by the short and curlies here. They've got a security, they've got a floating charge, and they've got the personal guarantee. Ultimately, the floating charge is to do with the assets, and that's all, I think, manageable. The personal guarantee is the biggie here, because ultimately the bank have asked the two parties to sign personal guarantees, and they've given the money based upon the covenant. That's the strength of the personal guarantees. Now, I think the only way out is to try and replace that investor with somebody else who's not only prepared to sign a PG, but also that the bank are going to accept. So you can't just ask any Tom, Dick and Harry to come along and be a PG. If they don't have the asset strength, then the bank aren't going to accept that. Why would the bank accept a lesser backed personal guarantee for the one they've got? It doesn't make any sense. So again, you can potentially end up finding yourself in a terrible situation where you've gone into business with a joint venture and they're absolutely stacked to the gunnels as far as assets are concerned, A1 covenant. And are the bank really going to allow that person to walk away to be replaced by somebody who's got a lesser covenant? Very, very tricky situation. Very tricky situation. But my thoughts are you need to get something in writing to make sure that you know exactly what are the rules of the game when you fall out, and then hope that you can have a decent conversation with the lenders so that you can get a new personal guarantee. I hope they get it all sorted out. Talking of trust, this goes back to Gardiner Street, and you will recall that we had done a deal with the previous builders, and the first tranche of money back to me had been paid, £1,250. That came in at the beginning of April, and I was promised on the 3rd of May that the second tranche would turn up. And what's happened? Of course it hasn't. So I've gone on to them. He claims he's on paternity leave and he's going to try and sort it out on Tuesday. I'm recording this on Monday. We will see. I have to say my trust in the gentleman is now wearing thin, if there was any trust to begin with. So let's hope. I'll keep up to date on this one, obviously, and see if we can make sure that we get this money out of him. So that is sharks in the water. Be very, very wary. Let's talk about another chap that I met, and he was a gas engineer, lovely fella, dipping his toe. He had been looking and doing some stuff with crypto, and he was going to, I think, come out of that. And he was then going to start investing in property, and he was wanting to get his ducks in a row. And he was very concerned that he was going to have to put down 25% to buy his new residential property. So it looked very much as if him and his partner owned a property. They were intended to set up, I think, a limited company, and they were going to buy a buy-to-let. His concern was that when he sold his residential property to buy a new residential property, he was going to have to pay 25% and also potentially some additional dwelling house tax. I said to him that it was unlikely that he would have to stump up 25% deposit if his buy-to-let, if he bought a buy-to-let as a second property, then he would have to pay the 6% and he'd have to put down 25% or maybe 20% in terms of a deposit. But if he was going to sell his residential property and replace that residential property with a new residential property, then the same rules of affordability would apply in connection with the residential mortgage. So it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to have to pay a 25% deposit. He could get a mortgage with a 10% deposit or potentially even a 5% deposit. It just depends as to what his affordability is like. And that plays into income and it plays into expenditure. Ultimately, when you're looking to get a mortgage and you've got a property in the background that is washing its face, then the same rules apply as if you didn't have a buy-to-let property. So it's all down to income and expenditure and the dance between both of those. The question in connection with ADS is fairly simple. If you are replacing your residential property with a new residential property and on the same day you buy and sell, then there's no ADS to pay. If you buy your replacement residential property and for whatever reason the dates don't dovetail, then you will have to pay ADS. But as long as you sell your existing residential property within 18 months as it currently stands, then you will get the refund of the ADS. So it just becomes an issue of cash flow more than anything. It really was a great evening. And as I say, if you've not been along to the event before, then you should definitely do so. You'll definitely get some benefit out of it. The networking thing is quite interesting. There's a lot of people there who've maybe not been to networking events, and it does attract a few people who are trying to make business out of it. And there's definitely a way to approach getting business out of these things. And I don't think that you can come in with the briefcase, with the suit and the tie, and then start selling your wares. It doesn't work like that. I think the crowd will just smell that you're trying to push something. And I have to say, unfortunately, this did happen during the evening, that I was chatting away to somebody. And if you can imagine, we're on a round table and I like to be as inclusive as possible and get a conversation going about mortgages and people's experience. And this chap came in with a suit and a tie, and I thought, gosh, we'll invite him into the chat. And I thought that he was going to maybe offer some stuff about his journey. And he just shoehorned in immediately that he was trying to sell something and that we should use him to do that. And it was just, it was one of these things that I just thought, you know, you've been deaf in terms of what we're trying to achieve here. And it just felt incredibly clunky. And once he'd done his pitch, he walked away, and I turned to the guy that I was talking with and I said, well, what did you think about that? And he just said it was incredibly rude. It just was, it was a really strange one. So listen, if you're going to come along, don't come along and sell things. Make sure that if you're coming along, create relationships before. As I always say, dig the well before you're thirsty. Don't expect to come along and start to sell stuff. You know, people have got to understand who you are. You need to have a relationship already in place before you start selling to the room. Let's talk, shall we, about income boosters. This is the fancy marketing name that Skipton Building Society have come up with, rather than the rather clunky, it has to be said, joint borrower, sole proprietor. So they've called this the income booster. There's lots of different types of joint borrower, sole proprietor. You've got Barclays do one, Newcastle Building Society do one, Metro do one, and Skipton do one as well. So the what Skipton are saying is that they are prepared to have four applicants and they are prepared to use all four incomes. Now, that's a bit of a game changer, because as far as I'm aware, none of the other lenders are prepared to offer the four incomes and the four applicants. Okay. And the other thing is that they've got no restrictions whatsoever in terms of the relationship between the owner and the supporting borrowers. So what they're saying is that they accept friends as well as family. And that, my friends, could be a huge game changer, because a lot of the lenders are wanting a familial relationship before they will entertain a joint borrower. So that could be something that would be of interest to a lot of the borrowers out there. They do say the main borrower has to reside in the property, but that's not unusual. The other lenders who do joint borrower, sole proprietor, are exactly the same. One thing they do stipulate, however, is that the supporting borrowers, that's to say the ones that aren't on the title, well, they must get their own independent legal advice. Now, sometimes you can instruct, or you can instruct the solicitor who is acting on behalf of the owner of the property, but you might actually need to get a separate solicitor to do that. So the benefits are obviously increased borrowing power. If you can use four incomes, then you've got a really good chance of getting over the hurdle in terms of affordability. The additional borrowers, the good thing is that the income booster, joint borrower, sole proprietor, is generally used as a stepping stone into your home. So once you're actually able to afford it, in terms of the income, that's to say the owner of the property, once they're able to demonstrate that they can afford the property on their own, then the additional borrowers can be removed from the mortgage, which is pretty good. Now, you can only do this once you reach the end of your initial deal period. That's your initial fixed rate period. You need to consider, well, the age of the additional borrowers, that's going to impact the repayments. Skipton will take them up to 75 years old. What they will say is that they may allow the supporting borrower to go up to 80 if the occupying borrower can get affordability up to 70%. So that's 70% of the total borrowing. So that, again, might be helpful. And it's a problem with John Borisow proprietor with the other lenders because they won't really allow friends. So you're looking at family. So if it's mum and dad, the chances are the term of the mortgage is going to be quite restricted. As ever, everyone is liable for the mortgage debt, joint borrower, sole proprietor. So those that are borrowers that don't have the title, their neck is in the noose. And the other thing to be aware of is, of course, that everybody has to have complete affordability checks done. So that's joint borrower, sole proprietor, or income booster, as they say down with Skipton Building Society. Another great addition to the joint borrower, sole proprietor mortgage scene. One other thing I just wanted to say was Leeds Building Society. I've been involved with Leeds Building Society where we've got a client who owns a property and what they're wanting to do is to transfer that property into the limited company of which they are one of the majority shareholders. And I was certainly of the opinion that they would have had to have instructed separate solicitors. Now, if you're using Leeds Building Society, you'll know that Leeds Building Society don't do joint representation. They will ask Aberdeen Considine to act on your behalf. You can get your own solicitor to do that, but joint representation can only be done with Aberdeen Considine. So I got Aberdeen Considine to act on behalf of the limited company, and I got another set of solicitors to act for the clients. Now, what Aberdeen Considine came back to me and said, well, why they would treat this as a transfer of title, and what they would be prepared to do is act on behalf of all parties in terms of the transaction, which means that we can ditch the other side's solicitors. We'll still need to get some independent legal advice in terms of the PGs, the personal guarantees that Leeds will sign. But that was something that is news to me. As I say, every day is a school day. That if you're using Leeds and you're buying a property where you are the owner of the property and you're selling it to the limited company of which you're one of the shareholders, then it does appear as if Aberdeen Considine are prepared to do everything for you. So that is the roundup. That is the podcast. That is episode number 98 in the can. As I say, there's a bit of, as I say every week, what we talk about has got the potential for you to think it's advice. The bottom line is that I'm a solicitor, I'm a mortgage broker, I'm not your solicitor nor mortgage broker. And you need to do your own research. Now, if you'd rather stick pins in your eye, that's your first rodeo, or you've tried and failed, then listen, just get in touch with us through the usual channels. My friend, we will catch you next week.